Court will proceed to the next case, Walters v. Astru.
Good morning, Your Honors. This is a disability case involving the Social Security Administration. Mr. Walters has filed for SSI disability. The issue here is whether there has been harmless error, and really a couple of sub-issues is what exactly is the standard for deciding harmless error, and secondly, did harmless error, is that present here? The parties, I think, agree that there was error here. I don't think there's any dispute about that. In Social Security disability cases, the administrative law judge or whoever the adjudicator is at whatever level is required by the commissioner's regulations to consider and evaluate every medical opinion in the record. In this case, the ALJ did not do that, and in fact, the opinions that were overlooked were from a psychologist to whom the Social Security Administration had sent Mr. Walters.
Well, Mr. Perrone, it seems to me you're kind of making the opposite argument of what we often hear. ALJ here relied on the treating physician's assessment and didn't pay attention to the consulting psychologist.
Well, and actually, yeah, and I am not making an argument that they should have paid attention to the treating physician. Actually, the ALJ said, I see the treating physician, I see the Quinco Behavioral Health Center records, and I don't like those opinions. I don't think they're well supported. And I'm not arguing the treating physician rule. I am saying the regulations say we will consider every medical opinion in your case record. And the opinion that was not considered here was, in fact, from a consulting psychologist. And Social Security sends claimants to consulting examiners, whether physical or mental or emotional, because there isn't enough evidence in the record to make a fully informed decision. So the agency, I think very appropriately, sent Mr. Walters to Dr. Evans. Dr. Evans does a evaluation, a very thorough evaluation, writes a four-page report, and included in that he says, even when taking his medicine, Mr. Walters has poor social skills, Mr. Walters has poor concentration, and I assess Mr. Walters' global assessment of functioning at 45. Now, that's a number that indicates, according to the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, that Mr. Walters cannot sustain a job. Maybe he can get them, but he can't hold on to them. So those are three important opinions from Dr. Evans, from the doctor, from the psychologist, rather, who evaluated Mr. Walters at Social Security's request. And again, I think the parties agree that that was error. The ALJ simply doesn't mention Dr. Evans. The ALJ doesn't mention the global assessment of functioning of 45. The ALJ doesn't mention the poor concentration or the poor social skills. You read the ALJ's decision, it's as if that evaluation never occurred and Dr. Evans' report was never written. It simply isn't in there. And that's error. Now, the question is that harmless? The district court used the wrong standard in evaluating that. And I think that the parties agree that the correct standard was stated in the Sarchet case from 1996, restated very recently this summer in the McKinsey case, is in Sarchet it talked about, could a reasonable ALJ decide the case differently if the error was corrected? In other words, if you gave Mr. or Ms. Reasonable ALJ out there this file and said, oh, be sure to look at Dr. Evans' case, could that reasonable person, could that reasonable ALJ come up with a different decision? That's the standard. Would a remand be pointless? Would a remand be a waste of time? Can this court be reasonably certain that an ALJ on remand, after considering Dr. Evans' opinions, would come up with exactly the same decision? The district court, on the last page of its opinion, simply looked at don't think there's harmless error here because there's substantial evidence to support the decision. Well, that's the overarching standard of review in Social Security disability cases, but not when there's harm or not when there's been error. And again, there's agreement that there's been error here, and it's an important error. Where the parties disagree is whether, in fact, the error is harmless. I would suggest to you that it is. Again, we have three opinions from Dr. Evans that are important here and that can make a difference in this case. One is that Dr. Evans said even when he's taking his medications, he has poor social skills. He's not saying, oh, his social skills are diminished from ideal, or they're moderately limited. He's saying he has poor social skills. Poor social skills, and I submitted in the reply brief some cases from district courts and another circuit. In each case, the claimant had poor social skills, and that was all or part of why the determination was made that they couldn't work. If you have poor social skills, that's, next to no social skills, that's as bad as it gets, you can't function with other people. And the undisputed vocational testimony at the hearing was that a person who can't function with other people, there aren't any jobs for them. Now, the ALJ said no in assessing Mr. Walter's abilities, said, I don't think this guy needs to have any contact with the public, but then he went on to say, but he could have occasional superficial contact with coworkers and supervisors. Well, in Social Security lingo, occasional means up to one-third of the day. And someone with poor social skills, even when on medication, isn't going to be able to have contact with other people up to one-third of the day. Concentration. Again, Dr. Evans said poor concentration. If you can't concentrate, you're not going to be able to do even simple tasks. And then Dr. Evans' opinion with the GAF of 45, as I said, that indicates an inability to hold a job. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Randa. Ms. Pedersen?
Good morning. May it please the Court, Counsel. Danielle Pedersen on behalf of the Social Security Administration. The standard, as Counsel has pointed out, for determining whether or not an ALJ's error is harmless has been set forward by this Court several times. Notably, in our brief, we cited to McKinsey. With respect to a physician's opinion, this Court has said that where it can determine the proper place of that opinion in context with the other evidence of record, that it will not remand the case for further proceedings, that would be essentially unavailing. The opinions of Dr. Evans, I think, as we've shown in our brief, can quite clearly be put in context with the other evidence of this case to allow.
I think that's clear, but how do we know that was done? In other words, if your argument is there's substantial evidence here, that may well be the case. But after what analysis was made? In other words, how can we feel comfortable that Dr. Evans' position was considered? I'm not saying it would carry the day.
Your Honor, I think the point is that because the decision is not mentioned anywhere, the opinions of Dr. Evans, his name's not in the decision, his specific opinions. So I think, as counsel has pointed out, we concede that the ALJ under our regulations is required to discuss and evaluate all medical opinions, even those of a one-time consultative physician. However, this Court has said even in the face of such an error, even where the ALJ has not discussed a piece of evidence that he is required under the regulations to discuss, this Court will look to see if in light of all the evidence, that information, whatever it is, a physician opinion in this case, whether it can be put in the context of the other evidence with satisfaction to this court. And
what does that mean? I don't understand what that
means. Well, Your Honor, this is what
this
it means.
This opinion is in marked contrast to the other opinion.
This is exactly
so
my
I
point,
don't
Your
know
Honor.
How you put it in context.
Well, Your Honor, you put it in context by using our regulations. And our regulations do say that where you have an opinion like this one that is in sharp contrast to all the other opinions of record, that does result in the ALJ being allowed to give it less weight. Here we have repeated GAF scores.
But what weight? I mean, how can we be comfortable that it was given less weight? How do we decide what weight?
Your Honor, if you were going to make that determination, we would be arguing about whether or not there was an error in this case. And I think, again, we are conceding that the ALJ should have expressly stated the weight.
That's the professional approach to take, and I'm not questioning that you've done anything other than that, and that's obviously your track record. It's just it's just an opinion that if it was considered, could carry the day also. I'm not saying that. It would have.
I'm going to respectfully disagree with that, Your Honor, and I think we set forth in our decision and our brief why we don't think that is true. A consultative physician, indeed, is hired by the state agency to supplement the medical record, to evaluate somebody in person, to see them in person, and to do a full assessment of their either physical or mental disabilities, in this case, mental. Dr. Evans did conduct that assessment. Another very standard thing that Social Security does, and I've seen thousands of these literally, is at the end, they ask for an ultimate conclusion. Based on all this, you've said he couldn't do serial sevens. In this case, he was able to do serial sevens, both forward and backward. You've said whether or not he focused, how well he did his, what would you do with the envelope, would you put it in the mailbox kind of things. But at the end of the day, what is your opinion about whether or not he can perform work? And that is at the end of Dr. Evans' opinion here, the end of his report, Social Security form prints right on there, ability to perform unskilled work. And under that, Dr. Evans concluded that he had adequate attention span for simple work, for unskilled simple work. Despite his statement that his memory difficulties were likely due to poor concentration, and despite his acknowledgement, based, we have to think, solely on what Mr. Walters told him, that he had poor social skills. Certainly Mr. Walters was complaining about being paranoid at work and things of that nature. Nonetheless, Dr. Evans...
Why did he give him these low scores?
Your Honor, there is the GAF score of 45. This court has recognized numerous times, as we have cited in our brief, and the district court properly noted as well. And Walters has not come up with anything to rebut this. GAF scores are not probative of an individual's residual functional capacity. GAF scores are something used by psychologists and other mental health professionals to evaluate where somebody stands at the time they have examined them and to determine the proper type of treatment, and then, going forward, to evaluate whether that treatment is working. GAF score in and of itself, I would hardly even call it a medical opinion as to someone's functional capacity. Counsel stated before this court just a few moments ago that a GAF of 45 is a per se.
It stands for a global assessment of functioning.
Correct, Your Honor.
It's just hard to imagine sending somebody with a GAF score back into the workplace to work around other people.
Your Honor, I understand what you're saying, and I have seen GAF scores much lower than this on people who their treating physician said were really okay. This is a one-time examining physician who's talking to a gentleman who's talking about a very distant history of committing suicide. He's claiming he never leaves the house, that he's very reclusive.
Paranoia.
But the evidence from the treating Quinco actually demonstrates that that is not necessarily the case. These hallucinations and delusions, there's absolutely nothing in the record to bolster those. This was based entirely on Mr. Walter's own subjective statements. The regulations and the case law of this circuit are clear that that is another reason to give less weight to the opinion of a physician, where it appears to be based on an individual's subjective complaint rather than actual objective medical evidence.
I guess I would feel better about it if there was some indication that the ALJ gave it that consideration.
Well, let me make you feel better with this then, Judge Tinder. Immediately after Dr. Evans saw Mr. Walters, a reviewing state agency physician evaluated all the evidence of record. This was in August of 2005, and Dr. Evans saw him in July of 2005. He is hired specifically to look at all the medical evidence, particularly that submitted by our own consultative physicians, and render an ultimate opinion on residual functional capacity and the degree of mental limitation. And that reviewing state agency physician found that Mr. Walters had no more than mild to moderate limitations in the four important areas, social functioning and concentration, persistence, and pace being the ones that were rated as moderate, and ultimately concluded that based on all the evidence of record up to that point, including Dr. Evans' assessment, that Mr. Walters could perform routine, repetitive, simple work that limited his contact with others in the workplace. The ALJ actually went beyond that opinion in his ultimate RFC finding and further found that Mr. Walters should not be subjected to strict high time or production quotas, things that would require him to get a certain number of things done at a certain time or to stay on a rigorous sort of schedule, as it were. And he basically limited Mr. Walters almost as much as one can be limited from dealing with others and still be in the workplace. Now, counsel correctly points out that occasional does mean up to one-third of the time, but we sort of are leaving off the other important adjective in this case, which was superficial. The ALJ found he should have only occasional superficial contact with others in recognition of claimant's own subjective statements that he had numerous problems with his coworkers over the years and that that resulted in him losing several.
But you said that Dr. Evans gave a contrasting, that was the word, I believe, contrasting opinion.
I'm sorry?
You have conceded that Dr. Evans's opinion was in contrast with all that.
I'm not conceding that, Your Honor. In fact, I said the ultimate conclusion Dr. Evans raised is entirely consistent with the RFC. Dr. Evans, despite what he said in his report, ultimately concluded that Mr. Walters could perform simple work. And that's what the ALJ found. With that in mind, with that ultimate conclusion, and considering the fact that, again, this GAF score, number one, by this court's own finding, does not have much probative value as to residual functional capacity, and number two, considering that this GAF score is dramatically at odds with every other GAF score of record, including those of the treating mental health specialists. And finally, keeping
That's
in mind...
That's why it's of great interest, I would think, to a decision maker.
That may be, Your Honor.
There was one point away why that would be less a matter of concern.
I see what you're saying, Your Honor. Again, if there were several of these lower GAF scores scattered throughout the record, and it looked like Mr. Walters was having these ups and downs, I certainly think that would be a situation where this court would need to send it back to find out more definitively what was going on and what weight the ALJ would give that. But where we have one score, again, that this court has said is not probative of functional capacity, and where that score and that physician's opinion was fully considered by the reviewing state agency physician, to whom the ALJ gave great weight, I feel this court can be assured that the proper place of Dr. Evans' opinion in context with the other evidence shows that a remand in this case would be futile and that the same decision would nonetheless come forward and would simply not be in anyone's interest at this point. If there's no more questions, we would ask you to affirm the commissioner's decision.
Thank you, Ms. Patterson.
Thank you.
Ms. Branda?
Just briefly, Your Honors. In Dr. Evans' report, the medical source statement that counsel has referenced reads, Mr. Walters suffers from schizoaffective disorder and he has significant difficulties with paranoid thinking and poor social skills even when taking his medication. His condition often worsens with poor medication compliance. His cognitive abilities are good, but he has serious psychiatric problems. And then the GAF score of 45 was given. The sentence about poor medication compliance, as this court has recognized in the Kangale case, K-A-N-G-A-I-L, and that's 454 Fed Third something, court recognizes with some emotional disorders, including bipolar disorder, that medication compliance is often a part of the condition. So, ideally, Mr. Walters would always take his medication when he's supposed to, but unfortunately, that's part of his illness. On the GAF score, counsel states that GAF scores are not probative of a person's functioning. I would respectfully disagree with that. It is an opinion. It is a global assessment of the person's functioning. The DSM-IV specifically states that it is. The case law from this circuit says that it is not to be the sole judge of a person's functioning or the only evidence of a person's functioning, but is definitely evidence and an opinion that needs to be assessed. I would also finally note that in that Cangale decision, the same decision that I referred to just a minute ago, it talks about that a person with emotional illnesses or disorders, often their condition gets better and gets worse. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Brandon. Thank you, Ms. Patterson. The case is taken under advisement.